thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here's one.
Here's John Williams.
109. Actually, I've got many of them for you all the way until 3 o'clock. Remember, between 2:30 and 3 o'clock this afternoon,
Lord have mercy.
It's back. We call it The Bright Side. It's a little segment where you call in and tell us something good in your world. It can be big, it can be small. It needs to be something personal to you. By the way, I think if I was asked right now, my bright side would be, because I've been reading this story this week a couple of times. I haven't talked about it on the radio, but just to show you how obtuse the bright side can be, a bright side for me this week was the idea that the king of Norway has been Holland has been a pilot, kind of co-piloting commercial aircraft with hundreds and hundreds of passengers for the last 21 years. Just up there flying the plane with the other guy or gal.
And nobody knew it.
I know. How awesome
That's really
is that?
Cool.
Can you imagine Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, one of the Bushes, Donald Trump? You know, you get to the thing, you turn right, you kind of take a little peek to the left when you get on the airplane, and Donald Trump was sitting there. You go, holy cow, President Trump is flying this plane. Barack
or
Obama.
Even John Travolta, you know, because he's a pilot. You get sit down and there's John Travolta flying your plane. Wow.
I know.
That'd be pretty cool.
You know, I don't want John Travolta flying my plane. I want the guy flying the plane to not be reading a script or thinking about anything other than flying the plane. I guess they said he was the guest pilot. I think that means co-pilot, but it sounds like he's got the chops to fly the thing.
He must leave his crown at home.
The KLM fleet? Yeah, that's how you know it's the king. He's got the headphones on, but then he's got this big crown on.
Maybe you can lend him yours, John.
He will. Yeah, no kidding. You do not want me flying your plane. He will now retrain to fly Boeing 737s. They're phasing out the one kind of aircraft that he was used to flying, the Fokkers, and they're now going to phase in the 737 from Boeing, and the king is going to be flying that thing. I think that's just kind of crazy. It's funny because, like, maybe you're the king. What if you didn't want to be the king all the time? If you had a secret passion to be a radio DJ or to sell insurance or to fly airplanes. He's flying airplanes. I just think that's terrific for some reason.
I wonder how they deal with security on that.
Think about that. Right, because
he is the king.
If he's doing it privately, that is, you know, kind of secretly, they're not saying, I want to fly with the king.
Right.
Then it could be just anybody randomly selected who bought a plane ticket that day. Dude, all of those people undergo a certain kind of scrutiny
to
make sure.
Do they put special air marshals on that plane, or how does that work? Because if you're in the air and somebody figures out it's the king, I mean, the security risks, I would think, are very high.
Oh, my God.
Get in that door and
think about how complicated it is for our president to play golf.
Right.
I mean, they close off airspace overhead. Imagine our president flying a plane in and out of an airport, busy walkways, terminals. I guess they don't have the same sort of concerns or fears.
And now I kind of feel bad for him that the cat's been let out of the bag. Because will he be able to continue that now that people know?
I want to fly with the king. By the way, that would be the one you want to be on, because you know if that plane is tip-top, it's in good
shape. Check, double check, recheck.
You betcha. They've probably got extra cocktails just in case we run low. It's everything is to the hilt there. This one's good to go. Speaking of presidents and kings, on display in Chicago next week are documents and letters from Alexander Hamilton. I'll have to talk to Thomas Jefferson about this next time I see him. And among the things that Alexander Hamilton wrote, which are going to be on display in Chicago, are a sexy letter that he sent to his then fiancee Elizabeth Schuyler in 1780. It's going to go on display at the Merchandise Mart later this week. It says this week. I presume they mean sometime starting Monday. I kind of think it's pretty fun, too, if you've been to the National Archives, if you've been to Washington, D.C., to see the Declaration of Independence or some of the original documents, and you see the original hand and think George Washington or Alexander Hamilton or Thomas Jefferson, they held this piece of paper. That's their ink on that page. It's pretty cool. And then to read the original words in their own hand is the closest thing you get to time travel, particularly since back then they were so much better at it than we are today. Not only did they master cursive, but they mastered prose. Here is Alexander Hamilton's letter to his girlfriend. "You are certainly a little sorceress and have bewitched me, for you have made me disrelish everything that used to please me, and have rendered me as restless and unsatisfied with all about me as if I was the inhabitant of another world. I don't even know what he just said there, but I know that's good stuff. Imagine putting that in a note card that you got at Walgreens to your wife. Instead of a tweet or a text or a little sexting that you do back and forth. Hey, honey, here's me in my underwear. That's what we do now. Brenda and I don't do that. But some people evidently do.
I don't know. You just said you did, John.
Oh, trust me. I would do that as a laugh. You know, I'm sitting there with my big boy underpants on, send that to Brenda. She wouldn't stop laughing. It would not result in any sex. It would result in just probably somebody getting a hernia from bending over laughing so hard. You are certainly a little sorceress and have bewitched me, for you have made me disrelish. That's a word, evidently, disrelish. Everything that used to please me, and have rendered me as restless and unsatisfied with all about me as if I were an inhabitant of another world. He said a new mistress is supposed to be the best cure for an excessive attachment to an old. If I was convinced of the success of the scheme, I would be tempted to try it, for though it is the pride of my heart to love you, it is the torment of it to love you so much, separated as we now are. Well, that was some pretty good stuff. Again, I'm not sure what he's saying there, but, you know, somebody should do that. Just take the letters from John Adams to his wife or Thomas Jefferson or Alexander Hamilton and their wives or girlfriends back to them, and that should be a Hallmark card. I would pay good money for that. You know, and then at the end I'd say, "Dear Brenda, not exactly sure what's going on here. Sounds pretty good. See you soon. Love, John." Something like that. $2. Boom. $8. Whatever. Steve, this concerns you, the editorial in today's Chicago Sun Crimes. A crackdown on protesters by Turkish guards in the U.S. Did you read this?
I did not.
This has bothered Steve all week. We have not talked about it.
It's outrageous what happened.
On Tuesday, they write, members of Turkey President Recep Erdogan's armed security detail viciously beat up protesters, putting some in the hospital. Have you seen the video of this? It's stunning.
It's happening on a square, a fancy square in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Upscale neighborhood, and there were protests there, and these guys who were protecting Erdogan went up to people on the ground and kicked them in the head. Not to subdue them, they were walking by them, kicking them in the head.
These people were protesting evidently something about Turkey or Erdogan.
I think they were Kurds, yeah, Kurdish protesters.
So there's some bad blood there, and as they walk by, these guys just unload on them. They unload on these presumably American protesters. Speaking too freely, the Sun-Times says, might be grounds for a beating in Turkey, but in the United States it is a protected right. Erdogan's guards and a group of supporters who joined the melee should be charged with crimes. In video of the attacks, it's easy to spot Erdogan's guards as they kick and hit defenseless men and women curled up on the ground. They're the ones who overwhelmed the Washington cops who tried to intervene. The guards likely have been flown out of the country, and they or others may have diplomatic immunity. But the Washington police and United States officials should treat them like common criminals, suspects nonetheless. Even if diplomatic immunity protects them from prosecution, they should be kicked out of the country for good. The White House has been silent, likely not wanting to strain a cordial relationship between Erdogan and Trump.
Now, the president's boarding Air Force One right now.
Yeah.
Imagine he lands in Israel, and as they're driving by somewhere in Israel, the Secret Service gets out of the car and just starts pummeling Israeli citizens.
Someone who has an anti-Trump sign, say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea that this could happen in this country.
This is what this was.
This is in the United States, a foreign leader's security guards just pummeled these people.
Yeah. You know what should happen is Erdogan should say something. If we don't have much recourse now because they're not here, because they enjoy some sort of diplomatic immunity, they should apologize. They should offer some sort of recompense.
Senator John McCain says that the U.S. The ambassador from Turkey to the U.S. should be ejected from the country. I mean, you know, and there's so much Trump political stuff going on that this it just none, got overshadowed. But
yeah, this is none of that.
Please, if you haven't seen it, look at this video.
Or
it,
don't. It,
well, I think
it's
people
stunning,
should.
Though. It's stunning. It's relentless.
And it'd be like on Michigan Avenue or in Lincoln Park. It's just amazing to
I'm
me
I'm amazed,
that this
too, that the cops, I mean, if that happened in Chicago, I think the Chicago cops would clean that up right now, that those guys would be in the back of squad cars. And you've got to believe the Washington police force has dealt with stuff that's nothing but protests and unrest there. How is it that they were not more engaged in confronting these guys? And they were trying to separate the melee. It was a free-flowing, fast-moving thing. But at the end of the day, these guys get away with it. I don't know how they didn't grab those guys and beat them with billy clubs.
Well, were they in a motorcade? I don't know if they pulled over from the motorcade or exactly where they came from.
I don't know how they escaped this. Maybe they got back in their limousines.
They
I don't
probably
know.
Were pretty armed as well.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
I mean,
if it came to that.
D.C. police maybe get credit for not escalating it, but... And they said they're going to, you know, handle it seriously, but we'll see. I mean, there's not been, I think the State Department, you know, spoke disapprovingly of it, but nothing very serious yet.
I want to read this email that came to me yesterday about something I said on the radio about Roger Ailes. You know, I was saying that whatever your opinion about Roger Ailes is and his legacy with Fox News, it had a profound impact on this country, good or bad. You know, he changed the media landscape. And I got this email. It said, John, you're blathering about the finally deceased beast who created the right-wing propaganda cable network that is the primary reason this country is probably permanently divided. And your comparisons to Cosby's disgusting but singular situation was beyond clueless. Your Roger Ailes claim to fame of changing the culture of broadcast media is anything but a point in his favor. Countless evil men can boast of changing popular culture, and many of them history remembers as devils. May Roger Ailes ever be emblazoned as a demonstrable example of what evil is produced when one's primary values are profit and power. May he rot in hell should such a place exist. I wrote back and said, I'm sorry that I did not sufficiently validate your feelings about Roger Ailes. I didn't present myself as a fan of his or his network at all. But I did say that I think you need to do some sort of disconnect between his personal behavior and what he did to the media landscape in this country and how he chose to represent some people who felt they were unrepresented. This is signed from Charlene, and I hope that Charlene then did not read the Wall Street Journal editorial today, because in part the Wall Street Journal said if Ronald Reagan was rightly called the great communicator, Roger Ailes, who died Thursday at the age of 77, has to be considered the greatest creator of communicators in the history of politics or television. Ailes' competitors and critics acknowledged his success with Fox, but never could understand how this conservative channel, how his conservative channel attracted and held so many viewers. Asked once how he accounted for this, Ailes told us that it was pretty simple. NBC, CBS, ABC, and his cable competitors, he said, aimed their programming at audiences on the East and West Coast. He programmed for the country in between. And finally, they write, Ailes' career ended at Fox amid allegations of sexual harassment, but it is hard to overstate the importance of his legacy in television and American politics. He rebalanced both. Now, that's a favorable review. Now, that's an editorial that not everybody is giving Roger Ailes, me included. He rebalanced both in the United States. The competition in both will continue, but Roger Ailes redesigned the playing field. It's 123. This is WGN, John Williams here. In the 2 o'clock hour, we preview the president's 9-day travel through Europe and North Africa. It'll be a fascinating trip to follow. Hopefully, it'll be boring. Hopefully, everything will go fine. If he comes back and everything was just fine, that will be the home run that this administration needed and the week and a half break that we could all use. Madeleine Albright said, I hope that for the next 9 days, he does not tweet. Amen to that, sister. By the way, I need you to call me at 651-989-9226. Oh, that's a different phone number. You can call, but nobody will pick up. So we're going to talk about the president's trip in the 2 o'clock hour. My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Tell me if you've ever done this and what results you got. Have you called your cell phone company or your cable provider and asked them for a cheaper rate? What happened when you did that? I mean, just out of the blue. You look down and go, ah, crap, this is too much. Have you called them? And did you get any satisfaction? I'm kind of going through a thing right now with my cable provider. And I'm just looking for some experience or advice. 312-981-7200. Call me right now. This week on Chicago's Best, can you handle the heat? Chicago's Best is kicking it up a few notches. An all-new Chicago's Best Spicy. Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. The word spicy has been hijacked. We can no longer say spice, spicier, or spicy without thinking of somebody. Are you paying more out of pocket for healthcare these days? Here's good news. Illinois Bone and Joint Institute offers high-quality orthopedic care that often costs less, from sports medicine and arthritis treatments to joint replacement, spine care, and rehab. The experts at IBJI will get you back to doing the things that you love affordably. They now have new locations, too, in Barrington, serving Lake, McHenry, and Kane counties. Learn more at IBJI.com. IBJI. Move better. Live better. Hey, Dan, this is John. How are you? You're on the air.
Yeah, John, I'm surprised. You know, each annually, they raise the rate, and then I call them and threaten to switch over to AT&T, and then they lower the rate back down to what it was, and then they give me the movie channels. So I went on two occasions. I mean, what rate are you paying? Are you getting all three?
I do have a bundle. Yeah, I have a bundled thing, but here's the deal. I called them the other day, and they go, because I'm actually transferring my service, and the guy goes, whoa. That's what he said. And he goes, boy, that's a lot. And I go, uh-huh. And he said, well, you know, you could have gotten a better rate. We have a better rate available. And I said to this fine fella, I said, well, he said, you should have called. He said, you haven't talked to us since 2015, like that's 1974. And I said, are you telling me that every now and then I just need to call up, complain about my rate, and then you'll give me a better rate? And he kind of said, yeah, I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that everybody every now and then needs to just call, complain, and then magically you get a better cable rate.
I figured you would have discussed this with your friends, you know, when you're saying, oh, my cable rate went up.
Hold on a second. Hey, Steve, have you done something like this? Have you actually called the cable company, said, give me a lower rate, and they gave you a lower rate? Steve said yes.
I have not. No, no, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I don't know if you're talking to me. No. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, John, can I ask how much you're paying monthly?
You cannot.
Okay, I'll tell you. But you have to promise not to laugh or kind of throw up a little bit. I'm paying over $250 a month.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Is that everything? Taxes, fees, and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Do you get movie channels?
Couple.
Well, I'm paying about $70 less than you. But that's per month. Added up over annually?
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. And the guy made me sound like I was the fool. He goes, well, you didn't. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If it is as simple as a phone call, I call you and go, hey, this is crap, lower the rate. And then they do. Then why don't they just lower the rate? Why don't they just do that instead of making it a squeaky wheel gets the oil sort of thing? I'd like to think it was a blanket policy they'd afford to everybody.
Oh, well, I figured you would get irritated as soon as you saw the increase in rate.
Here's what happened. My wife doesn't. Brenda pays the bills. So I didn't know about this until just recently. And I think Brenda just thought, well, it sucks to be us, but that's what cable costs, because that's what cable costs. We called them up. They said, you can bundle your stuff. Here's the best deal. We said, hooray. And then we started getting these bills, and, you know, we just kind of sort of became inured to the whole thing.
Well, I think you have a cause of action against your wife.
I'm hanging up now. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Yeah, I'm going to sue Brenda. Karen, what happened? You're on W, whatever we are, GN, I think.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm just terrible. What can I do for you?
Oh, no. I can make it better for you. Okay.
Yeah.
When you call, whether it's the cable company, if it's our alarm company, what you need to do is ask for the retention specialist or retention department. Don't ask for customer service, because they can't do anything for you anyway. And if you threaten to quit, they're probably going to send you to a retention specialist anyway. And they're the ones that can give you a lower rate. My husband, almost every year, I am not making this up, calls our cable company and gets us a lower rate, plus they give us a credit for an entire month as an apology.
See, that's what I need. I need some of that right now.
I'm telling you, it pisses us off because, like you said, is it really your job to be calling the cable company to be their customer?
Yeah.
They should be coming to you and saying, hey, we have this great new offer. We've reassessed your... I remember way back in the day when Comcast was first starting out in Illinois. They used to do that. They used to call and review your account with you.
Yeah, and so now... You know what? I'm sure they're not going to prorate the 18 years I've been a customer of them and give me a better rate all along, but a little something for the effort would be nice.
I mean, you're a loyal customer, but I'm telling you, ask for the retentions department. It makes a huge difference.
Karen, thanks for the phone call.
Okay, thanks, John.
Have a good day. Something I could have benefited from, I don't know, last year, year before that. One last quick call here. Stan, you're on WGN with John Williams. I was sort of complaining about my cable situation and how they said, well, you should have called us. We would have given you a better rate. Stan, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
Well, John, every 6 to 12 months, I call all my suppliers, cable TV, home phone, internet, cell phone. But the biggest one is the home alarm company. I paid for the contractual period, and I called them, and I was canceling. They said, we can reduce your fee 50%. And I said, can I get that retroactive? And they said, no. And I said, then I want to cancel. And I went to a cheaper supplier. But if you call all of these on a 6 to 12-month basis, you can get them reduced.
I want to get it down to zero. I want actually them to send me a check. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
No, but, you know, really, I have been this naive for far too long. I think I need to be in the habit of my credit card company, my phone company, my cable company. Everybody, I'm just going to call and say, hey, you got to do better. I'm out. Even though they know I'm not going anywhere.
And all of these are new expenses. When I was a kid, there was no cable
I'm
TV, you know, no internet, no cell phone, no home alarm, you know.
That's I appreciate
all,
the advice.
To what we had when we were kids.
Thank you, Stan.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, evidently, everybody's doing that but me. Phil Rosenthal, do you do that? Do you call all of your providers?
No.
Every 6 months?
I'm always scared they'll figure something out to make me pay more in the end.
Yeah,
and I really am. And, you know, outlier. I cancel the credit card. Oh, by the way, your credit rating's now terrible. You keep churning credit cards.
The one time you call and go, I know, I'm going to bust these people and make them cry. And the next thing you know, you're paying 48%.
Yeah, they somehow, I mean, I'm always wary of the upsell somewhere in there.
Well, that's what's also happened to me over the years. They say, well, this is a good idea. You should get the insurance on your line. So I had line insurance. I don't even know what that is, but somehow or another I was convinced.
Oh, there's line. It's insured. If it gets sick, the hospital bill is paid for.
So in the Chicago Tribune today, hits among misses in the sports section, most sports-themed TV series prove forgettable, but a few truly connect. And the reason that I've always enjoyed reading you and talking to you, but you point out a show that everybody's talking about that I haven't watched a lick of yet, but this Brockmire thing must just be a going concern.
They've ended the first season, so now if you choose to stream it or watch it on demand, you can do, as the kids say, binge watch. So you can see as many of them in a row as you want. I will say this about Brockmire, which I really like.
It's on what network?
It's on IFC, which is one of the reasons you may have missed it is you sometimes forget that even exists. You know,
I'm paying $300 a month for cable. I should have this.
You do need to cancel your cable. Let me just say that right now. That's too much.
It's
money
insane.
For cable.
Okay, but so I'm sure I've got this. I just can't find it in the 1800
channels. Well, it's online too.
I
if you have it on your cable system and you go online, you can stream it too because they'll ask you what cable system you're on and you register that way. But it's out there, and it's on demand as well. What I was going to say is I like it very much. Now, I will be the first to tell you it is not for everybody. The language is off the charts. Some of the concepts are truly outrageous. I mean, some people say it's filthy. Some say it's obscene. I very much enjoyed it, but I will be the first to say there are people that I would say, you know what, if you're a little iffy on some of that stuff, you might want to avoid it. It's definitely for adults and even not all adults.
Is it Veep obscene? Because the language
Veep's not obscene, but Veep has a lot of language.
And creative language. They don't just cuss.
They weave a tapestry.
Oh, my gosh. And God bless him. It's cringeworthy good. So Brockmire, though, is about what?
Well, it's about a sportscaster, a baseball announcer, who was at the top of his game years ago, finds out his wife is having an affair, and not just an affair, an addiction to sex and some fetishes and so on, and has a breakdown on the air. And that's the and then has a breakdown at his news conference, become and that's the end of his career for a while. He goes off to Thailand, he goes off to the Philippines, and he's
doing cockfights.
Well, he's doing whatever he can, you know, he'll describe himself, you know, going to the restroom if you know, even if no one's listening. He's sort of lost it. He comes back and is brought in to do the play-by-play, and I use that term loosely because they don't have a radio deal. He's basically doing it for the people on the PA system of a minor league team called the Frackers. And this is a team in a dying town with a dying franchise that could go under if they don't play in this season. They don't play over 500. They don't do a certain amount of concession business because the local drilling company wants the land for a flow tank, or a flow site. So it is, and the woman who owns the bar, a local bar. She's got her own addiction issues. So these are two wrecked human beings, but it's enormously funny if you've got a bit of a strong stomach for certain things.
Do we hear? Does it dwell on his sort of wacky play-by-play?
Yeah, well, he's quite a wordsmith. I mean, he'll work Godfather references into things. He's sort of a combination of an old-fashioned guy and also the guy on SportsCenter. The character started out as a video from the Funny or Die people. And this was just several years ago. And you had all these current contemporary broadcasters talking about how he inspired them, that the SportsCenter guys who did the repartee, they were just borrowing from him. And they had some of the calls on it, like, you know, that home run ball is it's not going to be in a you can't bury it in a Jewish cemetery because it was tattooed. Things like that. So he's both old school and new school, but and that's funny too. But as I say, the around the margins and the things in his life, he's a character.
So you rightly
and Hank Azaria, the guy from
right. Well, that's all you need to know. So you rightly, I think, say that a lot of the TV shows, and you could include movies in this too, that try and do sports get it wrong for a lot of reasons. Not the least of which is sometimes that the people portraying the athletes, you can tell, aren't athletic.
Right.
And that's a real deal breaker for me. But there's three that you liked in there, and I'm glad that you did. You liked Friday Night Lights. Is that the greatest sports theme TV show of all time?
I put it at the top of the list because of the range of emotions, the stories they took on. And you know, we should remember, this was a show that might not have survived. It died on NBC. DirecTV struck a deal to produce it and get it on, sending the reruns back to NBC at some point. But that's what kept it alive. Otherwise, this show would not
Friday
have,
Night Lights.
I think Friday Night Lights,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So because that's an interesting show. But it's a show. Most really great sports shows don't dwell that much on sports. I mean, one of the things I point out, by the way, sports itself is pretty dramatic. Sports itself is pretty amazing, and it's very difficult to top that in that sense.
Yeah, you don't need fiction. You don't need drama. It's already on TV.
Some of the things you see in sports you wouldn't believe is fiction.
Okay, so yeah, so interesting points. Okay, we'll put Friday Night Lights 1. Are you putting Sports Night 2?
I have Sports Night number 2.
Aaron Sorkin.
It was he was working on A Few Good Men and spending a lot of time in the hotel room doing rewrites and got addicted to SportsCenter and was watching Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick do what they called the big show in those days and thought, you know what, this is a show. And he created this. It bumped along for 2 seasons. It is, you know, he sort of stuck some romantic comedy elements to it. He did a little social commentary in it, but it's clever, funny, fast-paced. I really like the show. It gets a little weird in the second season, but a lot of shows do. I just think it's a good show.
I think it's a great 1 and a 2. My 3 is Ballers.
What's your 3?
What? Ballers.
Well, Ballers, I mentioned Ballers in the story, and it's coming back next month.
It's a great show.
It's a very good show. And it's current, and I didn't include in my list because I think it's hard to do because you don't know how they're going to end up. I didn't include current shows when I was talking about this. And I just don't think it's you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the next season of Brockmire is going to look like. I don't know what, they only did 8 episodes so far, so it's hard to know. Ballers is going into season 3. I think it's a very good show.
You know what? I
have a lot
Ballers.
Of hope for it.
And here's the thing. I now have an impression of what the real world behind the scenes of pro football is like, between the agents, the athletes, the women, the money. And I think it's ballers. I really, it has the feel of being true. I don't know if it is.
Well, I think that's true of most television shows. And I think that one of that's another reason why sports shows don't do so well is they often tell you things you kind of know better than the show itself sometimes. And you say, I know how this is supposed to be, and this isn't it. And I don't know how much I entirely know. It's presented, I think it's important for the best sports shows sometimes to make you not even think whether it's plausible or not. I don't think Brockmire is plausible, for example, but I think it's interesting. I think Ballers is pretty darn funny.
Well, the show that you – I was surprised what you said about Pitch, because this is the Fox series that's been canceled. The woman who plays professional baseball as a pitcher. How did that ever get produced? Because I didn't see a minute of it.
Well, that's a problem. you in America.
It's too preposterous a notion for me to even go there.
What part of it?
A girl pitching in Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball. That can't happen.
I think it can. I don't think it can happen today. I think it will happen. I mean, I think we saw it. What was the name of that Little League pitcher who was so good? I think that's not out of the question. It probably will be a pitcher, by the way.
A woman pitched for the St. Paul Saints.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question, and I think that we're probably heading there. I don't think this – it's funny. You know, this show, it started off one way, and it kind of started to veer into another, and I don't know you know, it suffered from a lot of things, but not the least of which being, I think it didn't get real promoted. Promoted particularly well after it got on the air. It got promoted like crazy beforehand. I don't know. I don't think that's out of the question. And you know what? I don't even think it matters whether it's out of the question. There are a lot of things on TV.
Right.
That
it could
aren't
be
real.
Preposterous and still be a good TV show. Okay, let me pause here. We'll come back. Phil Rosenthal's in our studio. His On Media piece in the Chicago Tribune today is Hits Among Misses, TV-themed sports shows, or sports-themed TV shows. Just give me the worst of them all in a minute. WGN, John Williams here. Phil Rosenthal in our studio. We're talking about sports-themed TV shows. Phil and I agree, and you must as well. Friday Night Lights, greatest of all time. You may have missed Sports Night, but it's got Sorkin all over it. If you like that, you like that. I put Ballers at number three. You can get into an argument about what's good afterwards. It was nice of you to mention The White Shadow.
I love The White Shadow. I really do. And if you look at, by the way, the cast, that was a Bruce Paltrow show. A lot of great directors came out of that cast. And because Bruce Paltrow and Mark Tinker and the people that worked on it were very open about sort of educating people on how to do that sort of thing.
Did you watch Eastbound and Down?
I did. I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked a lot of things about it. But yeah, I've seen it.
Worst of them all.
Well, you know, there are a lot of really terrible ones. An easy one to take a shot at is a show called Good Sports. It's like Sports Night. It's about an all sports network and an anchor team. Farrah Fawcett and Ryan O'Neal, and they were billed in the credits as Farrah Fawcett versus Ryan O'Neal. It was terrible. It was awful. And good people involved in him. Alan Zweibel, who I happen to like from his work on Saturday Night Live, and he wrote a two-person thing called Bunny Bunny about his relationship, his friendship with Gilda Radner, also wrote the movie North. But, you know, good writer, created it. People like Monica Johnson, who was Albert Brooks' writing partner in the glory years, helped write it. This show was terrible.
Sports Night. It was awful.
It's called Good News. And I remember writing a review of it at
good
the time.
Good Sports, yeah.
I'm sorry. Anyway, if I said it wrong. But Good Sports, and I remember writing a review of it at the time. It was 91, I think. It was a mid-season show. Maybe O'Neal and Fawcett have chemistry, but so does Drano, and it's easier to swallow.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's
end it on that, ladies.
Thank you.
Don't you love it when you've got a great line and you can never use it again because the context?
Oh, I'll use it all the time. It's the only good reason to mention Good Sports.
Phil, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming into the studio. Anytime. Read his piece in the Tribune today. They have a print edition, you know, it's on paper.
And it burns, wrap fish, whatever you need.
You can also read it online.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. By the way, lots of texts. You can always text to 312-981-7200. I'll just run through a couple of them real quick here. We have on the line Stephen Collinson, who writes for CNN and is going to preview for us what could be a really boring and uneventful 9 days in America as the president leaves, or it could just be more hijinks galore. There's just no telling. My personal guess is that as much trouble as Donald Trump has managing domestic affairs, that being in the presence of a Saudi king or European leaders is just going to be that much more complicated. I hope that he doesn't tweet to anybody. That's what Madeleine Albright said. But who knows? In fact, we were talking about the... where was the king where that was flying? The flying king of Holland or someplace, Steve? Does Holland have a king? This is why it's a good thing I'm not doing an international tour. The Hague, Netherlands. Some Dutch passengers on KLM flights might have recognized the co-pilot's voice. King Willem Alexander has been flying for 21 years. Can you imagine what it would be like if Donald Trump or Barack Obama were flying your 737 because they wanted to be a pilot?
Oh, yeah. So it was a Denmark? Or
yeah. Well, is
Norway?
Denmark the same as the Netherlands?
No, it's the Netherlands. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
See, I'm not real good on which of those are which.
No, that's not.
Those
that's
are different
Holland.
Places?
That's Holland.
This is why I shouldn't be president.
Right.
John, our president couldn't keep his fingers off Twitter long enough to fly the plane. The plane would be going into a nosedive because of distracted flying. John, I would also love to get, well, I don't have time for all of these here.
Can I give you one more?
Yeah.
The New York Times now, is what has become a daily thing, the president just left. The New York Times out with a story. I'll just read it for you. President Trump told Russian officials in the Oval Office this month that firing the FBI director, James Comey, had relieved, quote, unquote, great pressure on him. That's according to a document summarizing the meeting. Quote, I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job. I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off, end quote.
To whom did the president evidently say that?
Well, it looked like it would be Lavrov and Kislyak, the ambassador. It says to Russian officials.
I'm sorry, Stephen, who is saying that the president said that?
This is being reported by the FBI, and they are citing a document summarizing the meeting.
Well, I wonder whose document that would be. Presumably not the Russians.
I would be surprised if they
I mean, there would be no validity there. I wouldn't trot that out.
No, right.
No kidding. Wow. And I can imagine what he means by that. It's just a personal pressure not to have to deal with. I wasn't trying to compromise the investigation, but you can't go there. You can't say that. You can't do that. Stephen, don't you suppose it's good news for the president personally that he's no longer going to have to deal with this on a daily basis, that he can put his focus on the international scene?
Yeah, but I think this story is proof that this terrible week that the president has had with all these issues about Russia, the naming of a special counsel is going to follow him around the world to Saudi Arabia and Israel and Italy and Belgium, the NATO summit. Every time he gets before a camera and a journalist, he's going to be asked about this. And I think it's something that foreign leaders are going to clearly be very interested in as they, size up Donald Trump. This is his first step on the international stage. This is a president that doesn't have any diplomatic experience. Most new presidents start off, you know, they get their feet wet as a global leader on a trip somewhere fairly easy, like Canada or Mexico. But this president has scheduled a hugely ambitious trip. And the fact that we're going to get these stories, they seem to be, as you said, breaking every afternoon. We get some kind of bombshell.
Can I give you one?
The people in the White House are exhausted by this, and now they're going to have to manage it half a world away.
If I can give you one more, and it's interesting, these two stories came from the Post and New York Times are kind of warring with each other. Just as the president left the country, Washington Post saying this afternoon that the investigation into possible coordination with Russia and Trump has identified a current White House official as a quote-unquote significant person of interest.
Who is, if I'm the president, I'm ticked that you even have access to that information, Steve. I mean,
yeah,
Steve,
well,
I subscribe to the Washington Post.
And so that would be the first indication, if that was confirmed, that this investigation is not just looking at people who are in the campaign. We suspected that people like Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor, the former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, were in the crosshairs of this investigation. This would raise it to another level entirely. And the fact that this is happening as well, we're hearing about this in the week where a special counsel was named, I think just underlines how deeply serious this is for the White House. And the fact is we don't know where this is going to go. It's stunning, really, if you think about it, that three and a half months now into a presidency, there's a special counsel. We're getting these bombshell stories every day. This is,
clearly not normal, and this is clearly a presidency that now is operating and will be, because the Mueller probe, the special counsel, is not going to be wrapped up within a few months, as the president appears to hope. This is going to be with this White House, I would think, for the rest of this year and probably deep into next year. There's a huge cloud over this administration.
I don't think it's a presidency. A presidency would be sort of what the president oversees, you know, the actions and the progress that you make. That's your presidency. This has been just a group of people on defense since they lied about the size of the crowd at the inauguration. They haven't been able to accomplish anything except sign some proclamations here and there. The House passed health care reform, but that's far from being law. They have not done anything. Maybe it's just as well, but I don't know that that's true. But to call this a presidency is almost a disservice to all of the other people who've held the office.
That's very true. And I think one of the things we're seeing here, perhaps with the president's interaction with James Comey and in many other areas, is perhaps, you know, clearly he's very experienced. It doesn't seem that in some cases the president and the people around him actually understand the job of the presidency and the decorum that's required. For instance, that it's not appropriate for a president to try and have a relationship with the head of the FBI at a time when the FBI is investigating people around him. And I think you've seen a very sharp learning curve there. And this is something that we're going to be watching over the next week when the president is representing the United States around the world. People still look to the president of the United States, whoever it is, for leadership. He's the most powerful man in the world. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Donald Trump fits into that role, how he adapts to it, whether he's able to sort of carry it off. We've already heard stories, for example, from Europe about how the organizers of the NATO summit next week have decided to sort of change around their program to sort of get rid of the long speeches because they don't believe that the president either wants that or will be able to hold his attention on something like that, you know, intricate, boring speeches by foreign leaders for hour after hour. So this really is about how the president fits into his role as a global leader over the next few weeks. If it mirrors what we've seen you know, in the way he's done so domestically, it could be a fairly rocky few weeks.
Well, I travel every now and then to Europe. My friend Steve Bertrand does here, too. Anybody who ever has knows how physically demanding that could be. If I were in my 70s and had to fly to, what, five cities in 9 days and have, like you said, long, boring meetings and formal dinners, I would be a wreck. I would not be very functional. And then to imagine that this really isn't my game anyway. And then to imagine that the whole world is waiting for a misstep. I'm worried that it is too ambitious a trip for even a seasoned diplomat, let alone this novice that we've got.
And that's a very good point. I've been on many of these foreign trips with presidents around the world, and they are absolutely exhausting. You get on Air Force One, you fly halfway across the world, you land, you go through a welcoming ceremony, the president then goes into endless meetings, usually there's sort of a late dinner, and then the next day it starts all over again, and then possibly at the end of the next day you've got another long flight. There's just this steady accumulation of fatigue and jet lag, high-pressure talks, high-pressure public appearances. And as you say, even a seasoned president would find this very tiring. And the other thing is that the president is traveling with his entire domestic staff in the White House with him, with the exception of Kellyanne Conway, who White House sources isn't traveling this week. So we've seen how brittle the mood is in the White House. People in the West Wing are absolutely exhausted. They're dispirited after, you know, really, really tough political weeks, week after week, and it's been getting even worse over the last week. They're going to be thrown together on Air Force One for hours and hours. They're not going to be getting any sleep. They're going to be under intense pressure. So you can see how the fractious nature of this administration is going to be tested, let alone how the president is going to react. His staff are in for a marathon as well. And this is 9 days. You know, the president is going to be talking about Middle East peace. He's going to be talking about Iran's influence in the region. He's going to a NATO summit. He's going to a G7 summit. These are the biggest issues in the world. And, you know, if he didn't have any domestic problems and if he was an experienced diplomat or senator or lawmaker, it would still be, you know, a huge test for a new president. The fact that Donald Trump has all these other, you know, complications, I don't think it's possible to underestimate how difficult and how much of a challenge this is for the president.
Stephen Collinson's on a phone line from CNN. You wrote in your piece today, the most striking moment of Trump's visit to the kingdom, Saudi Arabia, will be his speech about Islam, given his critical campaign rhetoric and attempt to impose a temporary entry ban on residents of a number of Muslim nations soon after taking office. And then you wrote this, it's a quote, he will develop a strong, respectful message that the United States and the entire civilized world expects our Muslim allies to take a strong stand against radical Islamic ideology, an ideology that uses a perverted interpretation of religion to justify crimes against humanity. That's H.R. McMaster. But you point out he has to be very careful how he lectures the Muslim world, doesn't he?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, Donald Trump is going into this with, you know, a reputation as someone that's been very critical of Islam, some of the campaign rhetoric that you'll remember, the Muslim ban, the ban on residents of six Muslim countries that he tried to enforce that you mentioned there. So people will be watching this very carefully. Now, a lot of Donald Trump supporters and some people in the foreign policy community would say that in the past, U.S. presidents haven't been as blunt as necessary in addressing the Muslim world and Muslim leaders to try and get them to do more to crack down on radical extreme Islam. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if the president uses the words radical Islamic terrorism, words that the Obama administration shied away from because they didn't want to.
What's your guess on that, Stephen? What's your guess on that?
I think he will, frankly. I mean, he's been happy to talk about it in public in the United States. He overruled his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, when it was suggested to him that he wouldn't, that he shouldn't use that language. The speech is being written by the way, by Stephen Miller, the White House policy advisor, who was the principal author of the travel ban. And like President Trump, has a history of fairly sort of robust rhetoric about Islam. I think it's going to be very interesting, though, to see how this is sort of received in the Muslim world. I think if you look at the Saudis, U.S. allies elsewhere in the sort of Sunni Muslim world, I think they're quite happy right now to give the president a pass on what he said in the past. The United, the Saudis, for example, much prefer the policies towards Iran of the Trump administration than they did the Obama administration's policies. They
that's
also
an interesting
want US
point.
Help in Yemen.
I'm glad you mentioned that because not everybody in the world thought Barack Obama did a bang-up job, and Donald Trump actually might be more warmly received than, say, the previous president would in a couple of these places. I want you to just talk briefly about that, and then let's just quickly skip to Israel and Europe as we sort of preview the president's trip. Stephen Collinson's on a phone line from CNN. My number is 312-981-7200. 227, just another minute with Stephen Collinson from CNN. We're talking about the president's trip and previewing it a little bit. And while we talked about maybe what he needs to be aware of in Saudi Arabia, like Israel is going to be any easier, right, Stephen? That's a lot of minefields there. You've got to be careful what you say and how you step, right?
Completely. And you would have thought that this would be a bit of a breather for the president, given the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, has been a strong supporter of President Trump. But this week there's been several signs of tension, not least the fact that it now appears that the president will not say that he's going to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, as he promised to do on the campaign trail, because he doesn't want to harm the prospects for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Clearly, if he were to move that embassy, that would not just anger the Palestinians, which see Jerusalem as their future capital, but all of the Arab allies on which the president is trying to court on this trip. So
right.
The Israeli trip is not going to be the sort of easy ride that we expected.
Well, he said he was going to move the embassy, right? Wasn't that a campaign pledge?
It certainly was, and other presidents have made that pledge, but they find out that the complications of doing that once they become president make it something that, you know, they decide in the end that they're not going to do. The president has said that he would do that. People in the White House are now saying that, okay, it doesn't mean we're never going to do it. We're just not going to do it on this trip. It seems that the president sees some opening to push Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, though it's very difficult to see that the political conditions are in place either in the West Bank and Gaza or in Israel for either side to make the kind of concessions that would be needed to push this forward. But it looks like the president and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's in charge of this portfolio for the White House, want to give it a try.
One last question. Dave, you're on WGN. What did you want to say or ask? Hi.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible or not, but I heard somewhere that Trump wanted to be the first president to visit Mecca. I don't think that's possible, but I thought that'd be kind of stupid.
Did you hear that, Stephen?
Yes. No, the president doesn't have any plans to do that. Generally, Western non-Muslim people don't go to visit Mecca. He'll be in Riyadh. He'll be visiting King Salman. He'll be going to the royal palace. He'll be meeting a bunch of leaders of Muslim majority nations, and they'll be discussing how to sort of increase their cooperation to take on the regional threat from Iran. This is a reorientation of policy in the Trump administration. In the Obama administration, they tried to be a little bit more counterbalancing between Iran and traditional U.S. allies like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
The Trump administration has reverted to the more traditional posture on this.
At least at the end, open arms is the Pope. You know, I can just see him collapsing in there going, oh, Pope, I'm exhausted. Help me out here. Could you give me a blessing or something? You know, this is just killing me, Mr. Pope.
Right. Well, you'll remember even this is how incredible it is. Even a meeting between the American president and a pope is not going to be that simple. You'll remember there was a bit of a Twitter spat between President Trump and the pope during the campaign.
Yeah.
So even that meeting, which would normally just be something that's very formal and very friendly, has, you know, some kind of tension as we approach it. It just shows how many conventions this president has flouted, not just domestically, but internationally in the first few months of his presidency.
Nice to talk to you, Stephen. We can read you online. Stephen Collinson's piece, Besieged at Home, Trump Sets Off for Do-or-Die Foreign Trip, is available at CNN.com today. Thanks for your time, Stephen.
Sure, anytime.
Okay, Steve, so we're going to do the bright side.
Yeah.
By the way, I just got an email blast. Before we do the bright side, call 312-981-7200. If you remember how this bit works, 312-981-7200. You just call in and you tell me something that's good in your world, something that's making you smile. It could be that it's Friday. It could be that you're going to go to the Cubs game. It could be that you just beat cancer. It could be that you've discovered a new food you like. I don't care what it is. I want you to think about something that you are happy about, and I want you to call 312-981-7200 right now. Before we get to that, this thing about the president and what he said about Comey.
Yeah.
And so my phone is binging, binging, binging with all these news sources that I monitor saying that the president called James Comey a nut job.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing... Why are they doing that to me? You get to call James Comey a nut job. There's nothing wrong or illegal about that.
To the Russian foreign minister?
I mean, yeah, I don't care who. You get to say whatever you want.
Really? Okay. Well, so you call him a nut job, the chief law enforcement officer of the country, and then you say you firing him relieved great pressure
when it comes
to Russia?
He should have cut it off after nut job, I'll be honest with you.
Okay, I'll
give
you that.
I said he should have cut it off after nut job. I didn't say something else.
Right. It's an interesting thing. I mean, and you know,
it's not advised. It's not advised. I'm saying that. I have two open phone lines. I have one open phone line. Call me now. Here we go.
Some things in life are bad.
This is the bright side.
They can really make you mad.
It's back.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
Steve, I'll be calling on you in moments.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble. Give a whistle.
I sent a text.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
To Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini. I said, hey, Lou.
All always look on the bright side of life.
I said, Lou, every time I see you, you tell me I have to bring the bright side back. Always I'm bringing it back. What's your bright side? Join us in this segment, Lou. He said, I can. I'm on a conference call.
Well, I just found my bright side.
Okay, what's your bright side, Steve?
Lou can't join us today. No.
And by the way, there's only one rule about the bright side, and that is we don't judge other people's happiness. So if Lou not being here today to join us is making you happy, that gets to be your bright side.
Oh, you know it's not.
Okay, what's your bright side, Steve?
All right, so a week ago today, my two beautiful children returned from college, and the four of us now are back at home for a long, house-crowded summer. I can't wait.
All right, let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with Don. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Don? You're on the air.
Hello, King John.
Hey.
I'm smiling for two reasons.
Yeah.
The first one, I was in Toronto this week and was able to purchase a playoff game-worn Mark Burley jersey from the Toronto Blue Jays. And the really big one,
yeah,
the bright side back.
Thank you, Don. Hey, Tim, this is John. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling this afternoon? Hi, Tim. You're on the air. What's your bright side? I thought it was Tim. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just got back from the doctor. I had a malignant melanoma removed from my shoulder about the size of my thumb, and everything is great.
I've had the very same thing. Had a malignant melanoma about the size of my thumb removed from my shoulder, and everything's great with me, too. We're going to be okay, Tom.
Good. Hope you are. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Terry, this is John. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi, John. This is Carrie. I have my health.
That's all you need. That's all you need. Thanks for the call. How about Debbie? You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Debbie?
My bright side is John Williams. You're back. I've been your greatest fan since Peoria.
Holy cow.
So my bright side is you are back, and I am one happy girl.
Welcome home.
It's an old friend of mine named Debbie. Thank you, Debbie. This is Lori. Why are you smiling, Lori? You're on the air.
I'm smiling because I just got done riding my beautiful Arabian horse.
Always look on the light side of life.
Hey, Patty, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi.
Hi. What's your bright side? Why are you smiling today?
Oh, you don't even know what the week I've had. I'm a brand new grandma for Jackson Ryan. My son got his master's. He got a job out in Utah. And I have a very, very good best friend. One best friend. So I'm having a great week.
That's what I'm talking about. How about this? Sally, you're on WGN. You are on line 8. Sally, this is John. What's your bright side? Hi.
Oh, I love you, John. I'm so glad you're back. Anyway, my bright side is my daughter had an aneurysm and a stroke on March 6th, and she was just cleared this week with no deficiencies.
You got your health, you got everything, don't you? Thanks for the phone call, Sally. How about line 12? Julie, this is John. Why are you smiling this afternoon?
Hi, John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I have tickets to see Jackie Evancho tonight at the Genesee Theater. I'm very excited.
I guess she just kills it. I've never seen her, but I hear it's something.
She is she's a child prodigy soprano, and she's just amazing. She must have an old soul because she is so put together. It's for a professional singer. It's unbelievable.
Call me back with your review, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
When you're feeling in the dumps, stop be silly chumps.
Talk to, is it Bronwyn?
Yes, it is.
Hey, you're on. What's your bright side?
At 54, I finally got diagnosed with the right mental health condition, been on Adderall for a week, and things are changing. Yay!
Bronwyn, my best to you. Thanks for the call.
Have a good one. Bye. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final
word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Let's see. Who's next? What are we going to give the audience a grin. Seven. Let's talk to... Hey, Bill, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, the last time that I talked in your bright side, my wife was going through cancer treatment, and now she's cancer-free.
Oh, man. How about that? Is that the best news?
That's the best.
And boy, Bill, thanks for the call. My best to her, too. Hey, Mike, why are you smiling? You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, King John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm smiling and happy because I'm on my way to buy some pool supplies in anticipation of some warmer weather.
Yeah. I know it's a lousy day, but warmer weather's coming, right?
Yes, sir. I hope so.
Yeah, he's buying pool supplies. Always look on the bright side of life. Hey, Matt, it's John. Why are you smiling today? You're on the air.
I am 16 years cancer-free this year, and my son went to high school with Lou's kids at Ignatius.
Oh, yeah, those are two great things. Maybe the first one's even better. I'm happy for you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We have time for maybe one or two more. How about line nine? Hey, Laura, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
My bright side is my daughter graduated from nursing school this week. She's a bachelor of nursing, and I'm so proud of her.
Hey, Bonnie, what's your bright side?
Hi, John. Well, it's a rainy day in Lake Villa, and I'm cuddled up with a good book by John Sanford. And I have my best pal next to me snoring away, which happens to be my little dog, Mac. And we're just having a fine time.
Sometimes rainy days can be a good thing. When you're feeling in the dumps, be silly chumps. All right, time for one more. Marcy, you wrap it up for us today. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Marcy?
Okay, so I've never used a lawnmower, and we have this huge foreboding-looking lawnmower that I was going to have to try to use today because we have people coming over tomorrow, and my husband's busy. And just as I set foot outside, it started sprinkling. You must always face the curtain
with a bag. Marcy doesn't have to mow the lawn. What's your bright side? We'll do this next Friday and every Friday. Look for it around 2:35. Tell your friends, too. Ro and Ivana's. And Ro and what's the other gal's name that works with Ro? Anna DeVlantis. Ro and Anna are back in the studio in a couple of minutes here on WGN. By the way, Violetta's bright side is that she went to see My Fair Lady last night. And what's the review? How was that show?
I did. It was so wonderful. We were so close to the stage and just seeing the dancing, the singing. It was really magical.
So is it operatic or is it like a Broadway musical?
It's more like a Broadway musical, I'd say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't see a lot of operas or plays in general. So I'm
yeah,
not
but
sure.
Do they don't go around going, oh,
no,
yeah.
No. And I didn't realize it was a kind of a love story, and I like it.
You didn't know the story of My Fair Lady?
No, I had no idea.
To be honest with you, I don't either. I don't know what, but I'm sure, but I know that I would have recognized some of the music because some of my favorite songs are in that show. So I would have really liked to have gone. You had tickets that I couldn't use.
Yes, I stole your tickets, I think.
I think you did.
Or you gifted them to me, yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm glad you went. So who did you take?
I was supposed to go with my mom.
Yeah,
she wasn't feeling well, so I went with my dad.
Oh, how well that was. How sweet was that? You and your dad going to see My Fair Lady.
It was wonderful. And it's the music, it was so funny and witty. Just, I loved it.
And good performance by the cast?
Good performance, yeah.
It's only there for, like, I think not many more days, right? Well, I think it goes to the end of this month. Do you know what the run date is on My Fair Lady?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But okay. We also got these little sippy cups that you're allowed to take alcohol in with.
Yeah.
It was so cute. I drank my coffee this morning, actually, out of the same cup.
Yeah, well, I enjoy the intermission because you can get another glass of wine and then go
yes.
back in. And that's what you did?
Yes.
Yeah. There's some shows that Brenda and I have been known to, at intermission, kind of mingle about, like, oh, we're just going to kill some time here, and then we just get in our car and go home. I have left shows halfway through. And there's no sin in that. You know, you get to do what you want to do. It's your ticket. You don't have to stay. How long was the show? Was it 2 hours?
It was long. I think only the first act was 2 hours.
See, that's the thing. I think every show, even the like my favorite Broadway shows, favorite musicals, whatever I've seen, the best shows I've seen, I could still cut 20 minutes out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could do like three verses of a song instead of five. You got the words the same course
know,
over and over.
We know you're happy. We know that she's on the street where you live or something like that. So let's move it along now. What's next? What's next?
The rain in Spain.
Yeah, no kidding. Anna DeVlantis and Nutjob Rokan are in the studio.
I saw Nutjob trending. Was that
in relation to Roe, or is that something else? I didn't know.
That's on you, Roe.
Makes me very proud, by the way. If me and James Comey are both nut jobs, I'll take it. Although I kind of think we both are. I got to tell you something, though. All right, this obviously Michael Steele's going to join us coming up.
He comes on with you a lot. That's terrific.
Yes.
I like him. He's a good guy.
He's awesome, yeah. He'll have some thoughts on this. You know, when you stop and you think about the things that the bombshells that keep dropping.
Every day.
You know, it's hard to discern what the biggest one is. And I think this one's a pretty good one. Because if he does say to the Russians, you know, the pressure's off, don't worry about it.
Right. Okay, I get that. But Bertrand and I were having a bit of a disagreement. I think him calling Comey a nut job is... I'm surprised I'm getting pinged on my phone about nut job. I mean, that's a dumb thing to do, but whatever.
Yeah, it's expected, I think, from the president. Though,
I mean,
right?
He doesn't like Comey. He called him a nut job. That's not a terrible thing. But probably saying to the Russians, the pressure's off now that I got rid of him. That's more damaging, right?
I would imagine. And what's interesting is that the White House isn't denying this.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm.
They're not denying that this conversation took place because obviously there's a transcript of it. It's being read by somebody inside the administration to the New York Times. So who is that person? And the other story here that I think is kind of getting buried by the nut job thing, in that same story, they're indicating that there is a person in the current administration official who is the target of the FBI investigation into collusion with
Russia. Yeah, so it's not Manafort. I mean, all the people that you knew are the usual suspects are out.
Right.
Right.
Poor Sean Spicer. So he's just sitting back in his nice seat on the plane, wheels up. He goes, I've never been happier to leave the United States. He's got his Amstel Light in his hand, and he's just going to chill out and enjoy this flight. And then they go, we have this report.
I think what happened was he knew about it going in, and then as soon as there was a reason that it came out when the wheels went up on Air Force One, is that he had just responded with the White House response to the story right as they went wheels up.
Right, which is a non-denial too, right?
Well, it's a non-denial. They're not denying it, no. No, his response is that the president needs to negotiate, you know, with things with Russia, and, you know, he can have a conversation. The real story here is who were the leakers.
That's not the real. The real story is, the nut job aside, is this White House official close to Trump who is a person of interest.
Oh,
exactly. That's what it starts.
I wonder if it'll be somebody we know, or it'll be, you know, the assistant to somebody that we've never heard of.
I think it's going to be someone we know. I think it's gonna be a bigger name. I have a couple thoughts in my head. I've already shared them privately.
Is it Jared?
One of them is, yeah. But I was going to say that I wasn't going to. Well, because Jared had conversations with. I mean, that we already knew that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only other person that seems to have had that. So that would be really something. Well,
we'll sort it out.
Yeah, we got it. By 7 o'clock tonight, we'll be drunk and happy. Don't you worry about it, King John.